The best in Bitcoin made audible. You're listening to Bitcoin Audible with Guy Swan. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, your host, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. We have got a great read today. I've actually had to interrupt something else that I was recording because when this dropped, I was like, oh, this is a great one to just go ahead and jump into. CK Snarks from Bitcoin Magazine shared this out and I saw it. And it's by Aaron Van Vierdum, who obviously we've read so many pieces by Aaron on the show. And it's detailing out a new fund from the Human Rights Foundation for privacy development on Bitcoin. And this is just really exciting. I'm super bullish on this. It's so cool to see because there's been a lot happening actually recently with new funds for development and like renewed focus on really building this out. And I'd like to see more nonprofits, more companies like Square Crypto. I mean, there's just been so much with that, and I want to talk about that after we get into this read. But again, obviously, this is on BitcoinMagazine.com. Don't forget to check out SwanBitcoin.com/guy if you haven't set up your Bitcoin savings plan. They are the best, easiest, and lowest cost way to auto buy Bitcoin every day, week, month, whatever it is. And if also you haven't gotten your BitBlockBoom tickets yet, don't forget to use the offer code CC. That'll get you a 30% discount. We are getting close to that, so don't miss out on that. With that, though, let's go ahead and jump right into the read. It's titled, The Human Rights Foundation is now funding Bitcoin privacy development, starting with CoinSwap, by Aaron Van Vierdum. The Human Rights Foundation was already promoting Bitcoin's privacy features. Now, it will also fund the development of them. The Human Rights Foundation, or HRF, the New York-based nonprofit that promotes and protects human rights globally, has launched a fund to support Bitcoin developers who make the Bitcoin network more private, decentralized, and resilient. The first grant, worth close to $50,000, has been gifted to London-based Bitcoin developer Chris Belcher to realize an implementation of his CoinSwap protocol. A second grant of the same size will be announced soon. Quote, at the moment, the Bitcoin network is improving, but is far from as usable and private as it needs to be, with authoritarianism and surveillance on the rise in many countries, said Alex Gladstein, Chief Strategy Officer at the Human Rights Foundation. With more support, developers like Chris can make it possible for activists to receive donations and continue their important work under increased pressure. End quote. A grant to make Bitcoin more private. The Human Rights Foundation was founded in 2005 by Venezuelan film producer and human rights advocate Thor Halvorsen Mendoza, and is currently chaired by Russian chess grandmaster Garry Kasparov. It has been a strong advocate for Bitcoin and its privacy features for some time, with Gladstein in particular frequently promoting the digital currency as a financial tool for human rights activists, civil society organizations, and journalists living under oppressive regimes. Quote, human rights defenders and reporters around the world face increasing financial repression in the form of frozen bank accounts, restrictions on foreign funding, payment surveillance, and general difficulty in earning income or receiving donations, Gladstein said. Bitcoin can be a powerful tool for them to use moving forward, alongside encrypted messaging apps like Signal and projects like Tor Browser and SecureDrop. The Human Rights Foundation was contacted last week by a private individual who preferred not to have their name disclosed, who heard of the Human Rights Foundation and Gladstein's work on Bitcoin and wished to donate $100,000 to Bitcoin development. The money was gifted with no strings attached, trusting that the foundation would find a good home for it. The HRF, in turn, wanted to award two Bitcoin projects in line with the organization's own goals. To pick the recipients, The Human Rights Foundation conducted an informal poll among Bitcoin privacy experts to find two projects that are furthering Bitcoin's privacy, decentralization, and resilience. Belcher and his recent CoinSwap protocol came up as a unanimous suggestion, Gladstein said. CoinSwap stands out because if a robust mobile wallet could be developed with native integration, it would give transacting parties a much higher degree of privacy and protection from chain analysis, he explained. How CoinSwap can improve Bitcoin privacy. CoinSwap is a privacy technique first proposed in 2013 by former Bitcoin Core developer and Blockstream co-founder Gregory Maxwell. Leveraging atomic swaps, the trick that also enables the Lightning Network, users can essentially exchange coins without revealing any link between the exchanged coins, and without the swap being identifiable as such on the Bitcoin blockchain. If done right, that is. Belcher, one of the world's foremost experts in Bitcoin privacy, recently published a detailed outline of how the CoinSwap technique could, in fact, be done right. The developer, who previously authored the Bitcoin Privacy Guide and helmed development of both Join Market and the Electrum Personal Server, addressed a range of potential privacy leaks and envisioned a Join Market type of liquidity market to mix coins. Additional solutions include multi-transaction swaps to counter amount correlation, transaction routing to avoid single points of trust for privacy, and fidelity bonds to make denial of service attacks costly. A working CoinSwap implementation would represent another big step forward for Bitcoin privacy. Although tools like CoinJoin are out there and do offer privacy, these do often still reveal that the tools themselves were used. CoinSwap transactions, in contrast, could be made indistinguishable from regular transactions. This not only benefits CoinSwap users themselves, but everyone else, too, as blockchain analysts could no longer safely assume that regular-looking transactions were, in fact, regular transactions. They might just as well have been CoinSwap transactions. Quote, the Human Rights Foundation teaches activists in authoritarian countries how to use cypherpunk technology, like Signal, encryption, and more. And a lot of these activists also have a use for Bitcoin because they keep getting banned from having bank accounts, Belcher told Bitcoin Magazine. Obviously, if they use Bitcoin without privacy, their governments can spy on their transactions and cause them problems. Privacy tools like CoinSwap can help with that. Belcher plans to realize his CoinSwap protocol both as a standalone application and a software library that other wallets can use to add it as a feature. He will be developing it as a software project to which anyone can contribute and hopes to have a minimal viable product ready in about 6 to 9 months. Quote, the Human Rights Foundation fund directly helps the CoinSwap project, Belcher said. Sometimes I would do freelance coding work unrelated to Bitcoin when I needed the money. With grants and donations like this, I won't need to do that, and can instead just focus on the CoinSwap project and Bitcoin privacy. More Bitcoin privacy development to come. The fund's second gift, also worth close to $50,000, has already been earmarked for another developer who's working on strengthening Bitcoin pseudonymity at the network level, and will be announced by the Human Rights Foundation in the near future. The grants represent the first donations to Bitcoin development from a human rights group, and some of the first from a nonprofit organization. Adding to several for-profit companies that fund Bitcoin development, Gladstein hopes that more nonprofits will follow in the future, adding to the diversification of the Bitcoin development ecosystem. Quote, in today's world, Bitcoin developers are often free agents, relying almost exclusively on the generosity of exchanges and corporations, said Gladstein. Hopefully, HRF's fund can inspire other organizations in the nonprofit and academic space to support Bitcoin research and software development. Moving forward, the organization will continue to raise support for Bitcoin development on a rolling basis via a crowdfunding campaign. Any donations will be used to support individuals or teams working on specific projects to help improve the Bitcoin network. The fund will aim to support worthy projects on an ongoing basis. 95% of donations will go directly to the winning developers, while 5% will support the foundation's human rights advocacy in general. Proposals for future grants from the Human Rights Foundation can be sent to dev.fund@hrf.org. Belcher also accepts donations for his CoinSwap development on his own funding page, link included. And I will have that link as well as to the crowdfunding campaign in the show notes so that you can check that out and on the website page. But that will close out our article by Aaron von Wertheim from, again, BitcoinMagazine.com on the Human Rights Foundation funding Bitcoin privacy development. And this is a really, really awesome development. And I want to talk a little bit about it and just Bitcoin funding in general. But let's go ahead and hit our sponsor and we will jump right back in. Okay, so if you wanted to donate to CoinSwap, obviously you could donate to the Human Rights Foundation, which that's pretty awesome that it's like 95% will always go to a development. And then also, you know, you're supporting the Human Rights Foundation, which is an awesome organization in and of itself. But if you want to directly just help CoinSwap, this specific project, you can go to bitcoinprivacy.me/coinswap-donations. Obviously, I'll have both of the links to the Human Rights Foundation and this if you would like to donate. And, you know, with the BitBlock Boom discount, you know, you're getting, with discount code CC, you get 30% off. So maybe that's the easy way, you know, if you're going in thinking you're going to spend a full ticket and you get 30% off, maybe take 10% of that, like, or a third of your discount and shoot it over to CoinSwap. In fact, I'm probably going to send like $30 or whatever over to him, after this, just so I can help, because this is really awesome. And I've been digging into this on the Linux Foundation, on the Bitcoin Dev mailing list. There's some really neat things, because I don't think I dug into CoinSwap on the show. We've talked about PayJoin some, obviously CoinJoin. Talked a lot about like the privacy options in Lightning and like paying yourself, which was one that we did with Bitcoin Magazine recently, another of Aaron's articles. But one of the really cool things about CoinSwap is that they managed to do it in Belcher's setup here. He actually manages to do it with very few transactions, which my initial thinking was that this was going to be like three transactions from either side because of how like atomic swaps work, and it's very atomic swap-ish. But there's a couple of really interesting elements to it that I didn't realize until digging into this article dropped, and then I just started digging into it. This actually uses the it can use like adapter signatures and Schnorr like down the road, but it's actually better for privacy if it uses the ECDSA, how you can actually split up a key and actually make a normal ECDSA like address a multi-sig address. So you could actually have like old signatures like the P2WPKH. I can't remember how these things go. It's something like that. You can essentially make like an address that starts with a 1 or even an address that starts with a 3. You can make both of those multi-sigs without changing the fact that it's just a single address. You don't have to actually make in the script. You've made it as part of the key itself. You have broken up. You found a way to actually make the ECDSA address based on multiple keys. And because of that, they're actually able to, that and the fact that you hold with the person that you're swapping. You hold, very much like in the Lightning Network, you hold a time lock, I guess you could say insurance transaction. That's kind of how I refer to it in Lightning. You always hold that so that you can execute if anything goes wrong. You essentially, it's trustless. Everybody always has an exit plan before even going forward with you know, any of the swapping or sending of transactions, et cetera, et cetera. So in that way, it's really awesome. And they actually, it sounds like the way Belcher explains it in the dev mailing list is that they've actually managed to get it down to two transactions. And that's because normally you would have to do, you would at least have to do four, two on either side. One to, like, let's say Alice and Bob are swapping. Alice sends to a multi-sig address in combination with Bob, and then it sends from there. Like that's the coin swap address, and then it goes to Bob afterward. And then the exact same in reverse as Bob sends to a multi-sig coin swap address, and then sends from there to Alice. And you do that, not necessarily one address. I mean, you could have multiple UTXOs in this, and you could break it up, you know, however you wanted, so that, you know, to try to break, and he talks about like a number of different options in doing this, to break the heuristic of the inputs and outputs of each transaction or each set of transactions being exactly the same, or at least very close to it with a fee as the difference. And then, you know, you can like just kind of check this block and the next block around it and see if there's another transaction that appears to have the exact same amounts, but that you can break that in like a number of different ways. So that's like a basic heuristic that you could do to try to uncover what these, if these are coin swaps, even though there's nothing about the addresses that make it appear multi-sig. Again, it can look like just a normal base address that starts with a one. So it's a huge anonymity set already because you look indistinguishable from any non-upgraded wallet. I mean, of course, you can do it with a Schnorr later on if you wanted to, and SegWit, if I'm not mistaken. I believe it's basically compatible across all of what we have right now. I could be wrong about that, so don't quote me on it. And obviously, you would need separate implementations of each one. But regardless, the cool thing about this is that it's doable now, and it's using the ECDSA generated addresses to actually, and this is something I can't remember exactly who talked about this when I first saw it, but the ability to hide a multi-sig within a single ECDSA like key or address, that is just awesome. That there are even things that we can do with a seemingly you know, outdated, like the legacy addresses, that you can, there's, you know, math that you can apply and cryptography that you can apply just to the generation of an address to create new scripts and types of, you know, capabilities within a legacy address, within just the system as it is. No soft fork, just implementing it within like a joint market, like within a wallet or a client or a new network sort of thing. And that's kind of one of the things about CoinSwap is that you actually need a liquidity network, very much like JoinMarket and sort of like CoinJoin, where, you know, there is somebody basically agreeing to be the other side of this and taking a fee in the midst of doing so. And there's a lot of really interesting, like, ways to mitigate the issues there. And before I lose track of it, it seems like, from what I read, I don't think it was explicitly stated from but how it was explained, it seems like you're able to do this in actually two transactions. Just the transaction going into the multi-sig on Alice's part, and then the transaction going out of the multi-sig from Bob's part. So the completely separate coins, but that are tied to each other. And that what you actually get is that said that there's actually a method of having Bob and Alice exchange their private key for the multi-sig of each of their parts. So like Bob is locking up in a multi-sig and Alice is locking up in a multi-sig, and Bob's will pay out to Alice or where Alice wants it to go, and Alice will pay out to Bob's address, right? Because they're swapping coins, right? You know, the ones that Bob had are going to Alice's thing, whether it be a wallet or a payment or whatever, and the one that Alice has goes to Bob. And in doing so, they're completely separate. But The cool thing is that you actually don't have to go from the multi-sig address. You don't have to do the final step because Alice can actually hand over her private key to the multi-sig that she sent it to, which is, it doesn't have any other coins in it. She created it with Bob, to do this transaction. And then all she has is the signed, she doesn't have Bob's key. Bob gets hers in that multi-sig. So she just has the, couple day time lock, insurance transaction, and Bob will get both keys. So he just knows that as long as he's watching the blockchain, it's like having a lightning channel. He just has to, keep running a full node and make sure that if anything happens, he broadcasts, his, he broadcasts from that a transaction to exit from that multi-sig. But, can just basically leave it there. He has the keys to just transact that whenever he wants. And then same with Bob. If Bob gives, or excuse me, same with Alice. If Bob gives Alice the key to the other multi-sig, which again just looks like a normal address on the blockchain, so nobody else can see that this is multi-sig. And if he gives her the key, well, then she has the full key, and all Bob has is a time lock insurance clause. And in doing so, both of them have already swapped coins, and it was only one transaction apiece. That is really awesome to be able to pull down the size of the data needed to actually get this privacy is really cool. So CoinSwap, just in general, is a really neat tool, and the number of ways that he talks about, like, breaking some of the heuristics, breaking what you call it, like trusting like Bob or someone else, and the fact that you can kind of stack these, like you can use two market makers in this situation, where you can use Bob and then Charlie, and then Bob doesn't know that yours are technically like let's say it goes Alice, Bob, Charlie. Bob doesn't really know that those coins are from Alice, just knows that Alice is in fact controlling them, and then Charlie could just as well think that the ones from Bob are from Alice. Like, again, neither of them really know where things are headed because they don't know anything about anything outside of their explicit arrangement with Alice, who is navigating this. And then Charlie is the one that pays the retailer or pays back to Alice's address with coins that are completely disconnected from the original. So again, it's just another great way to limit trust in any central party and do so with as minimal number of transactions as can be done on the blockchain. And that's just really, it's really exciting and cool to just read about all the different ways he's thinking about, making this essentially an incredibly private way to get to destroy Bitcoin history. And in doing so in a wallet where, potentially you could try to max or match mixers and mixees on a regular basis, and where normal transactions attempt to do this all the time. Like, this could be a standard. The fact that, this is obviously open source, anybody can use it or take advantage of it. And if that became a norm in some, mobile wallets and stuff, that would be really powerful. And, you could potentially have this same market be used to aggregate transactions from multiple parties. And that's another thing that I really, really want to see, because if we can start to combine these techniques with aggregation and batching methods in a decentralized way, I don't know the ins and outs of exactly how that would be pulled off, but I feel like it's obvious that it's there's got to be some way to do that if this is possible. And that would then at the exact same time lower cost for users of this wallet or this client or this network, however you want to distinguish what this thing is, since it kind of has the elements of all three. And then of course having other wallets take advantage of it as well. A simple way for any wallet to easily integrate and add that functionality and just basically be like, you want a little bit extra privacy? Check box, and there you go. And Bitcoin development is, we've seen a lot of progress in More people focusing on Bitcoin development, and it's still very subpar, but it's really exciting to slowly see it start to catch steam, you know, like to really start to build, and for a bunch of companies, a bunch of organizations taking this very, very seriously. Because, you know, like just like Chris says in the article, is that, you know, you had to do a bunch of work on other projects in order to keep funding the ability to work on these privacy projects. And now that is not needed. This is going to go so much faster if we can get serious people with funding on board to push this thing forward, you know, like so that people can really focus on this. And it is something that Goldman Sachs, I believe, had an article. And I don't think I read it on the show. I did get into it, but I don't think I did it on the show. I should probably go back and do that one. A really great one about Bitcoin development funding in general. And BitMEX. BitMEX Research also has a really great piece on development funding. And we've just recently seen Square Crypto announce a pretty significant fund and do so to anonymous developers that they don't even know. That's pretty powerful and exciting. And there is a lot of new work happening with privacy on chain in Bitcoin, as well as obviously Lightning. And that's something that Chris actually brings up in the CoinSwap stuff that I was reading, is that, you know, why wouldn't you just use Lightning? And talks about the potential of many exchanges, but partly because of the liquidity problem, but partly just because of the level of privacy that Lightning implements, which is essentially what CoinSwap is doing. The privacy that you get with Lightning, where someone else's coins are paying for yours, that's what you're getting with CoinSwap. And it's almost a shockingly similar setup. You're actually kind of creating a one-use Lightning channel almost. You know, you have the multi-sig and you have the insurance transaction just in case something goes wrong, and then they have the opposite with just the full addresses, with the full amount of the channel, and you're basically swapping those, which is what you're doing with partial balances, with payment amounts, and a Lightning channel, is you're locking up your balance in your channel, and then the next person is locking up theirs, and the next person is locking up theirs, and then finally the last person is locking it up to the retailer or to the final wallet that you're sending to, or atomic swapping out to a normal on-chain address, et cetera, et cetera. You know, whatever the person is trying to do with it, and then it unlocks them all along the way, and the payment that happens at the end has nothing to do, has no on-chain connection with the payment that went into it, the initial payment that started it. That's essentially what CoinSwap is, except that it's entirely on-chain that this happens. And it really helps Bitcoin privacy in a lot of different ways. And the fact that it already has, it's essentially, you know, it can use legacy addresses and hide multi-sig within that, and no one has any idea from looking at the blockchain that whether or not that is a multi-sig address or regular legacy address from, you know, an ancient Bitcoin Core client. That's a pretty major benefit that's hard to quantify, you know, because it's one of those things that has its own network effect. Like, as soon as you start to implement something like this, then all of the old addresses, all the older clients, all the clients basically get an additional layer of privacy, because now you don't know. Now you just don't know. Is this a coin swap? Is this a regular transaction? Is this a normal address and a change address that I'm looking at here for a payment to somebody? Or is this a coin swap to, to who knows where, and then a swap into a Lightning channel? Like, you just don't know. And it would just be really, really awesome to see that widespread. Because even if you've only got like 20% of the network adopting tools like this, and, you know, users really taking advantage of it, that does so much to help break the heuristics of the other 80% without them having to do anything. That it, It's again, like I said, it's hard to quantify the amount of benefit that that could be. Like that is true progress toward fungibility in Bitcoin and the inability to do whitelists and or blacklists on the network, or at least a major hindrance with huge collateral damage that makes it infeasible essentially. And just because we're talking about CoinSwap, there is another really cool idea. Maybe this one deserves its own episode just because it's complicated. But I'll give you the lowdown of it just because it's fun. There's an idea of because anybody can be a maker on CoinSwap, like they can be the market provider and be like, I'll swap your coins, here's my fee, sort of thing. Since anybody can do that, it's Sybil. You can Sybil attack it, right? You can spin up a whole bunch of nodes saying you're going to be, a market maker here, and then screw everybody. Basically make them lock up their coins and then execute the insurance transaction, or just, push all those through. And now that person can just, they just know where all the transactions went, who they went from and who they went to, because they were the facilitator. Granted, like I said earlier, you can stack these between multiple parties. But if there's no cost to being 100 different parties, maybe you're both of them. And there's actually a way to create Sybil resistance, which is actually a very broad mechanism. It's something that can be applied to almost anything, really, if we're talking about like a decentralized marketplace. And it's called a fidelity bond. And this is a really clever idea. It goes along with the kind of with the concept of proof of burn, except that you're not actually burning the coins. But what it does is, like, let's say I was going to be a maker. I wanted to be a market maker for CoinSwap, and I have so I'm like I'm gonna create a fidelity bond so that people can trust me and know that I'm here for a specific amount of time in order to try to help this market. I'm providing liquidity, and to some degree, you can trust me. Is I essentially am, it's kind of like I'm signing with one Bitcoin. And what I do is I lock up as my bond, I lock up one Bitcoin for 6 months in just an open time lock that people can verify on chain. And I have to have that, I have to prove that in order to be a maker for somebody. And then I screw that person. Let's say, Alice, whoever it is. Alice is doing this, and I have shown my or proven my one Bitcoin fidelity bond. And I, force her to use the insurance contract because I screwed up or purposefully, maliciously tried to, spy on her, do whatever the hell, And so she immediately bans anything related to my fidelity bond. And the only way for me to, and then she posts publicly that, be careful about this person with this fidelity bond. And here is, and she can provide proof that I tried to screw her or that she had to use the insurance contract in the agreement because I published the wrong thing on the Bitcoin blockchain and tried to take her coins or something. And in doing so, everybody else can automatically just ban me. And now I've got a Bitcoin locked up for 6 months and I can't do business with anybody. And the only way that I can do that is doing a fresh fidelity bond with another Bitcoin or however much money I want to put up in this bond to be seen as legitimate. And I can't Sybil attack that because I have to have an enormous amount of coins. I have to have tons and tons of capital to do this. So it's much better for me to take advantage of the reputation of my current fidelity bond and just protect my customer, play by the rules as well as possible so that I don't get banned. I don't have like a bad quote unquote rating in this marketplace. So that's just a really clever idea, and I've read about those in a couple of different places. And then there's the other really cool thing that I haven't even really dug into, like I've just heard about it, but it's so fascinating, and the use of it with CoinSwap is the two-party ECDSA thing, where you can just, you can hide multi-sig in a regular public key. There's, I don't know, there's just a lot here for some really amazing privacy solutions. And it's so awesome that the Human Rights Foundation is helping to fund this. And whoever the donor is, I remember, you know, it says in the article that somebody donated $100,000 and said, you know, do what you think is right with this, and, you know, find good projects and good development to fund with Bitcoin. Here's $100,000, make it work. That's just awesome. Kudos to whoever that donor is. That's an amazing thing to help push us into the Bitcoin future faster. And of course, to everyone at the Human Rights Foundation, Alex Gladstein has been absolutely killing it. I follow him and like everything that they're doing over there. It's definitely something to keep an eye on. And yeah, much love to Bitcoin Magazine for doing this. Aaron Von Wertheim, again, it's unbelievable having a resource like this to stay up on all these things. And it's very, very much appreciated. All right, I've got a lot of great stuff coming for the rest of the week, and we are on the final stretch for two different audiobooks on the horizon, so keep an ear out for those. Do not forget to subscribe to the show, and of course, support those people supporting this podcast and keeping Bitcoin Audible alive. SwanBitcoin.com/guy is going to be the best, cheapest place to set up an auto buy of Bitcoin at whatever interval you want and have a secure long-term Bitcoin savings plan. And then, of course, come check me out at BitBlockBoom. Let's hang out. Let's get a drink. Let's talk Bitcoin. I will be speaking, and I think you guys are really going to like the presentation I have. Go to BitBlockBoom.com, I think. Buy your tickets with discount code CC. That will get you 30% off. Don't forget it. And with that, thank you so much, everybody. Share this out with everyone you know in the Bitcoin and crypto economy space. And until next time, I am Guy Swan. Take it easy, everybody.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.